and welcome into the Who's On Podcast, part of the Sabre Podcast Network. Back at it again after another thrilling, cardiac-pumping, game-winning victory for the Cavaliers. Three straight now they've won by one possession. This one obviously comes on the heels of a beating Washington State off the bye week, 22-20. And to talk a little bit more about this game in depth, and also a little bit later on in the podcast, we are going to talk about UVA men's basketball's first exhibition of October against Vanderbilt last week. We got Chris Wright from thesabre.com. Chris, you were in Scott Stadium for this one. I was not, of course. Kind of walk me through what, I mean, like 56,000, what did the crowd feel like last night?
So I'll get to that. You said cardiac calves or whatever. Does Virginia ever win like where it's not like that? Like, I mean, what, like, so the bowl eligibility is on the line. Not that that's their end goal. It's not, but yeah, for fans, like, it's been a while. So yeah, anytime it feels like there's something on the line, whether it's the College World Series or the 2019 team championship or lacrosse, you know, Final Fours, it's just always so dramatic.
Nothing easy. Wow. And it, like, these last three games have brought me right back to that 2007 Virginia team. And they're getting referenced a lot now because it's the first time they've won five games in a row since 2007. This is their highest ranking since 2007. But I mean, gosh, if you remember back to that team, like, it was every week that it was just like, how are they going to pull a game out this week? And now that's kind of feeling like these last couple games. You know, we started off the year with some really easy, like, you know, blowout games against Coastal, William & Mary, and Stanford. You had the NC State game kind of mixed in there. That was a little more of that cardiac Cavs ilk. But these last 3 weeks, man, like, it's been on the edge of your seat the whole time.
Just feel like Virginia has a, and maybe it just feels that way, I don't know. It just feels like Virginia has a high percentage of these that are like high
there's
stress.
There's something happening.
but the crowd was good. You know, some people said it didn't feel as full as Florida State. I thought the Hill didn't look quite as full as Florida State. I thought maybe the bowl end, particularly in the upper deck, looked more full than Florida State. Washington State brought more people than I thought they would, so that helped that end also. Yeah. You know, some games, some teams don't bring anybody. Yeah. And Washington State didn't bring anything but a mascot on the field. They didn't have any cheerleaders, but they did have a decent amount of fans there. So I thought that helped the crowd part. But in terms of the feel of the crowd, I think 2007 is a good reference point because it may be, you know, 2019, a little bit during the Bronco era, some hope.
A little bit.
Right?
Yep.
But you got that vibe of that hope thing again. And so 2007 had that. 2019 had that. I guess 2011 to a degree had that. But it had that feel to the stadium. So even coming down from the media lot, and I always walk down, you could hear the parking lot sooner. Mm. So there was just a more noticeable sort of noise, even pregame, than there has been in recent years. So yeah, the crowd was definitely into it. I happened to go up into the stands to take some fan photos just as that whole sequence was happening with the false starts, Prevard's interception, like all that little segment through there. I was sitting in that end zone bowl. You couldn't hear.
Yeah.
You couldn't hear. So I went up there to take pictures of fans and then turned and took pictures down toward the field while I was there. And I could see why they jumped. There's no way you could hear that clap count.
Same guy twice in a row too.
Right. And I think the Washington State quarterback was quoted afterwards as saying maybe he should have gone to a silent count or something like that. There's just no way alignment on the far, you know, tackles could hear a clap count. It was definitely loud. So yeah. I think the fans were into it. You know, the students are into it. Helped by night games this year, right? You've had four, you know, late games. I think that helps the student turnout. So by and large, like, I think fans are easing their way back in. You know, I think Virginia, from a football perspective, is always worried, you know, is this real? Is this an illusion? Or is this 7, 11, 19, all hope years, right? And all those years turned out well in terms of what that team ended up doing. But in terms of the big picture, I think there's still a little bit of dipping your toe in from at least some Virginia fans.
Yeah, it was funny. I tweeted out the crowd size, 56,048 tonight at Scott Stadium. Second most of Tony Elliott's tenure. A lot of people forget that JMU game. You had a lot of JMU fans that traveled over for that one. It was also, the first game since the tragedy. So, that one I think had about 500 more fans in attendance that one. But yeah, it seemed like this crowd was up there. But it's funny, I tweeted that out and you see like, oh, we laid an egg, or on Tony Elliott's a fraud as a head football coach, terrible at X's and O's. Those are the comments. But I tweeted that out like halfway through, so like as the game went on, the comments underneath of it got a little bit better as we kind of progressed through this thing. But let's get into kind of the meat of it here. UVA coming back from 10-point deficit, their largest deficit of the season, to beat Washington State 22-20. Bowl eligible for the first time since 2021. If they actually play in the bowl game, it'll be the first time since 2019. I guess that's a caveat we got to throw out there now. First 5-game win streak since that 2017, best start since 2007, 2007, and number 16 as of Sunday in the AP Top 25. That is their highest ranking since 2007. So it's all going back to 2007, which I think has a lot of good just parallels between these two teams right now, especially with how they're winning games as of late. One big take, Chris, what do you got?
So to me, it's this team isn't perfect, but they have a little something, right? There's a little vibe about them that seems resilient, or do whatever it takes, or we'll find a way. And obviously, the 2007 team had a lot of that. We'll find a way. We don't know what the way is going to be, but we'll find a way. So that's kind of one of my biggest takes, I think, is that the opportunistic vibe of this team. The defense is opportunistic. It's not perfect. It'll give up a long touchdown or a long pass, or there'll be a little phase of the game where maybe the defense isn't quite as good as it can be. But especially lately, it's coming up with big moments, really big moments, in three straight games now to help the team win. So there's definitely that part. I think the offense is that way, right? They're not quite as explosive as they were early. And maybe that is offensive line stuff, but they're opportunistic when they get a chance to put the game away at Louisville, they did. When they get a chance to cut it to a one score game, here, they did. So it's opportunistic, I guess, is the best way to describe it right now. If not perfect, that there's something likable about them. And I know that was a little bit of fan worry, and maybe it still is for some, is I don't, fans would be like, I don't know how I'm going to relate to this team. I don't know any of these guys. There's 50. What was it? 54 new players. I've already forgotten that came in. How am I going to pull for these guys? Well, I think they're showing you a little bit of why, right? There is a resilience and an opportunistic feel to them that makes them entertaining to watch and support.
You could call it resilience, you can call it, kind of that fight, but there's a little bit of magic with this team and just kind of how they find ways to just do what it takes to get across the line. I mean, we talked about it 2 weeks ago with the Louisville game, and I kind of come back to this point where like this is what good teams do. They win when the cards aren't in their favor. That's what Ole Miss did last week against Washington State when they were in a very similar situation to what Virginia was in. And they found a way. But I like how you brought up the likability of this team, and it's kind of just a bunch of guys that like are kind of sacrificing their bodies along the way. They're just doing whatever it takes. Like you look at Chandler Morris, at one point he's in the blue medical tent, the next he's out there leading that 97-yard drive down the field and made a fantastic throw to Sage Ennis over the middle of the field to set up the touchdown there. You're looking at, Jamari Taylor, he was hobbling around at one point, and then he's, getting key fourth and one runs or key third and one runs to keep the drive going. I mean, people forget about that 97-yard drive. That drive almost was dead upon arrival because they were on third and three, I think it was, and Jamari Taylor gets the first down for them to kind of keep that drive alive, and they kind of got on a roll after that. But it was almost like, oh boy, here we go, and almost another three and out. But yeah, they kind of had that fight, and that's the bend but don't break defense is fully alive and well this year under John Rudzinski. We've seen that time and time again. Even when they break, they come back, and now they're getting some turnovers to kind of help change the momentum. That's something that we haven't seen under this John Rudzinski in this defense. So a little bit of magic with this team in kind of every step along the way. Going into our Who's On Podcast Player of the Game, put out four options. Cam Robinson is our back-to-back winner. Got it at Louisville, gets it again this week. Obviously, eight tackles, pass breakup, that's fine. But the main reason he's getting this is because of the safety. And I kind of called a little bit on my post-game report, little Adrian Burnham there with how he kind of pushed the ball back to keep it in the end zone. It was a little reminiscent of that, but I thought this was interesting, and that was a stat I was looking for. This is the first safety to win an FBS game since, of course, it had to be Iowa, recorded back-to-back safeties to beat South Dakota State 7-3 on September 4th, 2022. So seems fitting it was Iowa. Seems fitting it was Cam Robinson making the play.
You know, Cam Robinson, since he's been back, has been really, really good. There's no doubt about that. You know, you wonder if he played the NC State game. Does that look different, right? So you're certainly looking at a team when it has a lot of pieces that are healthy and available, has players who can make plays. And so Cam Robinson is a guy that's doing that on defense. The other one that caught people's attention a lot was the suplex tackle or whatever. And even, and so you don't know
WWE
this because
style.
you weren't at Scott
Yeah.
Stadium, you don't know this. Even the PA announcer said Cam Robinson suplexes blah, 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 for the tackle. So everyone had that same immediate wrestling WWE reaction to that. So I think that's interesting. But you know, post game, he was just talking about, you know, doing what it takes and the defense being opportunistic and coming up with big moments and that sort of thing, everything we were just saying. But on the safety, he was like, honestly, I had no idea really if I got a safety or not. I just wanted to get down that line as fast as I could,
Yeah.
because even if he got it out, as long as you stop him right there, it's fourth and long. They have to punt from their one. So he wasn't like definitive, like, yeah, I knew I got it as soon as I got down the line. And he was like, well, I wasn't really sure, but I was happy it was a safety. So yeah, fitting that it was Iowa. I'm shocked that it was 2022.
Yeah.
Right. They were debating this in the media room when I walked in. The guys and girls down there were like, when do you think that's ever happened? Has it ever happened? They were asking ChatGPT and all of that. And apparently ChatGPT didn't bring up Iowa because I don't remember anybody saying it in the media
It's a
room,
little
but
misleading because it was a 7-3 game, so like the two safeties that they got back to back was what won the game.
right. So it's like, well, okay. But yeah, no, I've never seen a game. I didn't see that Iowa game. I've never seen a game
Yeah.
end on a safety in terms of it being the winning points. So, yeah, interesting way to win, but certainly you'll take it.
For sure. I mean, yeah, when I saw it, I didn't think that it was a safety. I thought he clearly got out of the end zone. I'm like, why are the officials calling for a safety? I saw, obviously, the players are going to jump up and say safety, but I don't think Cam Robinson was one of those guys that thought it was a safety, like his teammates were saying that. It was right there on the edge, and really, you could only see it on that replay of, how the ball kind of bounced back from Robinson to stay in the end zone. That's kind of how it was a safety.
I couldn't really see the ball at field level from my angle. So I knew that
Yeah.
they had stopped the player in the end zone. I just wasn't sure where the ball was. So
Yeah.
I know it's a player of the game, and I assume you, I don't know who you put out there, but I'm going to honorable mention Drake Metcalf just because of everything that's gone on since Brady Wilson's been out and they've had to be resilient. Him being able to slide over as
Yeah.
an experienced player and kind of, even if it's smoke and mirrors at times and duct tape together at times for the offensive line here these last couple of games. The fact that he's able to move into that spot, I think, is important. And I also think his energy of just who he is, I
Yeah.
think it rubs off on guys. I really do. So I'm just going to honorable mention him because an offensive lineman will never get player of the game. But I think it's just certainly not in these settings, right? Like,
Yeah.
I just think it's interesting how important he's been to this little streak.
I've tried a few times. I try to get them the player of the game for the Florida State one. I put them out there as an option, and obviously with what Chandler Morris did in that game, he was going to win no matter what. But yeah, the play of the offensive line, it wasn't quite there the full game last night, and they weren't able to get that push, and they weren't really able to establish the run game like they had in previous weeks. But I mean, gosh, yeah, Drake Metcalf has done Warriors work just to get them to this point. I put an honorable mention in there too for Scott Stadium. And they were the second highest vote getters. We talked about the size of the crowd, but five false start penalties. And then, you have the quarterback for Washington State, looking over to his bench because he can't hear anything. I can't remember a lot of crowds like that at Scott Stadium in quite some time, to have that kind of impact on the game. I mean, even the Florida State game, I don't think Florida State had those kind of issues, that Washington State had on Saturday night.
Yeah, that bowl end where they were stuck, it was definitely reverberating down there. And remember, they have walkie-talkies now. You have in-helmet communication, and the quarterback was still having trouble hearing. So it was definitely loud down there for that kind of key stretch when Virginia's making its comeback.
Yeah, it's not something you're used to seeing at Scott Stadium. So gave him a little shout out there. They came in second in the player of the game poll, but Cam Robinson takes this one away for the game-winning safety. I'm still trying to come up with a good name for that. I feel like, plays like that need a name. You look back, and I was kind of disappointed looking back to 1995, and like that play doesn't really have a go-to name that people use. I guess for thinking back to Mamadi Diakite's, like they call it the shot, I guess sometimes. But we got to do better as, UVA media and fans alike, that we got to do better to naming these plays, because that's what it's all about, man.
Hey, you're gonna have to lead the way. I don't have a good name for a game-winning safety.
Yeah, I've been brainstorming on it all last night. If you've got options, please tweet them to me, comment on the YouTube video. Whatever you do, email me. I need some good names for this. Let's get into the offense now. And there are some bright spots. We'll get to them later, but this offense has kind of been, kind of slowed down the last two games against Louisville and against Washington State. They're two worst offensive outputs in back-to-back games this season. As far as yardage wise, total offense, kind of like, let's look in. What is going on with this UVA offense right now, where they're just not able to move the ball down the field as effectively as they did, especially at the beginning of the year?
I think it starts where it always starts. The point of attack is not quite as crisp or quite as clean as it was for large parts of the beginning of the season, right? So whether that's tied to Brady Wilson being out or other injuries up front or the combination of multiple injuries up front, I don't really know. I just know it's not as crisp as it was. I also think there's a dash of Chandler Morris not being as comfortable as he was. So whether that's shoulder or maybe feeling the pressure, because he is really good at feeling it and getting out of the way, but is he reacting differently because it feels like there's a little more breakdowns happening? I kind of lean toward the running game not being quite as good as it was too. So I'm not just talking about allowing pass pressure. I think the inability to just grind. Remember that one drive they had like 10 running plays in a row? These last two games, they haven't been able to just turn around and hand it off three times in a row and get a first down. Right, there's a little bit of a missing grind, I guess, to the running game right now that maybe is affecting the whole operation. Right, it changes your play calls if down and distance is different. It changes your play calls if you don't think you can run it or if you don't think you can capture the edge. So I'm wondering if that's a contributing factor, and if Brady Wilson can get back, how does that help, and can they stay in rhythm? So even if he comes back and then you move Metcalf back over. Just what does that do, right? Like, in terms of chemistry and rhythm and all that sort of stuff. But I do think that's where it starts. The running game not being quite as good, the protection not being quite as good, even though it's not a disaster. They didn't allow a sack in this game. I'm not saying it's, dumpster fire or whatever. It's just not quite as crisp as it was when they were rolling up 40 plus points at Scott Stadium multiple times.
The one thing that I keep coming back to when I talk to people about this is, like, you look at the last two games specifically, they go three and out on that first drive. And then, the other team that they're playing, whether it's Louisville or Washington State, they're putting long drives together and keeping the offense off the field. And so it feels like we get to the second quarter and we just haven't seen the Virginia offense out there that much. I mean, the Louisville game, they had one possession the entire, first quarter. And so like they're not getting into that early rhythm that I feel like, Morris especially, like he likes to get into a rhythm with his offense and get into a rhythm with his receivers as he's, trying to distribute the ball around the field. And I feel like they just haven't had to gotten into that. Part of that, I think, is big time due to the running game slowing down in recent weeks. And I think teams are realizing now you got to come with three, four guys if you're going to bring Jamari Taylor down, because the first guy ain't going to get it done. And so last night you saw a lot of times with Washington State, like he would get past that first guy, the next guy was right there to get him. I think there's a couple different contributing factors, and Chandler Morris definitely. There was one throw, I think it was the Trell Harris, where he kind of skipped the pass, and I was like, that's a throw that Morris typically would make. I don't know if it was the pressure or if the shoulder was still bothering him, but it was he kind of skipped the pass to him, and it just didn't look like a throw that Chandler Morris would usually miss. And so there's a lot of different things. I think looking forward to next week, hopefully Brady Wilson can kind of get back out on the field. I know he warmed up, and that's usually kind of how UVA does things. They get the guy out there for a warm up the previous week. They bring him back the next week. So that would kind of look like the timeline now for Brady Wilson to be back and ready for the game down in Chapel Hill at UNC.
I do think Louisville and Washington State's front seven are among, and obviously Florida State as well, who they didn't struggle as much with, but that front seven for both of those teams, I think is better than maybe they're given credit for. I know Louisville's defense is getting plenty of credit now that they beat Miami, but that defense has been pretty solid all year long, regardless of who they played. And I think Washington State, back-to-back weeks have held offenses that have been scoring a ton. In the early part of the season, they held both of them down. So I think Washington State deserves some credit to some of the struggles, at least.
No, they deserve a lot of credit. That's a tough, hard-nosed football team over there, and they, just haven't gotten lucky in recent weeks. They've really like changed their identity as the season's gone on. And, the team that lost to North Texas 59-10, I was said it multiple times last week, but that 16.5 point favorite for Virginia going into that game, like that was just way too many points. And I don't know what Vegas was thinking there. Luckily, I don't gamble. So, you can't even gamble on Virginia and in the state of Virginia. So, looking at some bright spots for the offense, I did want to highlight one guy real quick. You talked about Drake Metcalf earlier. Jamal Edgerton had a big game, his best. Probably his best game yet as a Cavalier, five catches, 102 yards, and some really timely catches on that 97-yard drive. He had, I think, a 15 and a 19-yard catch on back-to-back plays. They were kind of dialing up his number more on some of these plays. It was kind of a weird, like, wide receiver screen, like, hesitation, and then he would, like, take off downfield, and Morris and him were clicking on that. But really good and really timely big plays from Edger in this game.
I think those were RPO type plays where he's stock blocking or at least showing a stock block and then releases. But he was in the post game media and just basically said that Chandler happened to find him on those plays. And the biggest thing I took away from him is that how happy he is being on this team. He said that multiple times. Like he really likes being in the locker room with these guys. He feels like they're hungry. He feels like guys are in it for the team. And obviously, he was on a struggling Purdue team last year, so he's contrasting it to that in terms of his own experience. But it's kind of neat for him to get a big receiving game because so far he's gotten a lot of credit for his run blocking, right? So he's been really good on the perimeter doing that job. But they've now had three different receivers have really big games. So. With Cam Ross's situation, he got just devastated on that hit. I mean,
Oh my gosh.
that was a really hard hit, particularly field level. It looked pretty brutal. So we'll see what his situation is in terms of is he in protocols or not, concussion protocols. We don't really know, but it
By
seems
the
like
way, I said at the time, like I didn't think it was targeting. I thought they got that call right, just looking at the replays. I'm watching on TV, so I got all the replays, but I did think it was taunting. Like, I mean, he was like ripping at the ball while the guy's on the ground and then like pointing at him and like kind of in his face. So I thought there should have been a taunting call at the very least.
Yeah, I don't fully understand targeting. Like I know they didn't he didn't make
Who
helmet to
does?
helmet con yeah, he didn't make helmet to helmet contact, but he did lower his head and he did launch. He just happened to miss his helmet. That's the way I look at it. So I don't really know what targeting is. I don't even bother trying.
I think I'm 0 for 9 on targeting calls this
Yeah, I don't
year.
even bother trying anymore. Like half the time I think, and I don't ever think I feel like I'm on the opposite side of whatever it's called half the time. So I clearly don't know what it is, but He was dinged up for that, so we'll see if he's back this week. And that's going to put Cam Courtney in a heightened role if he's not able to play. So,
Yeah.
you start wondering about depth of this team. Xavier Brown also got hurt. So, does Noah Vaughn come back? Just kind of what's going on there. But we talked about the offensive line. Is Chandler Morris dealing with a non-throwing shoulder? So you're starting to get to that time of year where you got to manage all of that stuff, both as individuals and as coaches and as medical staff and the whole nine yards. Harrison Whaley is one that may become real important here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If Jamari Taylor's limping around and Xavier Brown's out for a while, this guy has the most rushing yards of anybody in active FBS right now. So
Yeah.
not like he doesn't know how to run the football. And he had
You.
huge runs on the 97-yard
Yep.
drive and the touchdown. Yes, he fumbled the football.
Was gonna say, you got the good and the bad last night from
Well, that,
Whaley.
the helmet, I had it in my lens. The helmet hit right on the ball. So I don't know how much
Yeah.
that was bad technique versus bad luck, but he did put the ball down and Virginia dove on it. So that bailed them out and
Yeah,
he ended up scoring on that
another
drive.
honorable mention for Jack Whitmer, because if they lose the ball there, like, I mean, yes, there was time left, but you're down by three. Like, they needed that field goal to tie the game up, and Whitmer recovered the ball. So heads up play by him. Defense wise, two pretty, up and down performances in back to back games, but I do think they're getting better out there. And the wild thing is, the pass rush last night, it's gotten better in recent weeks, but they weren't able to get a ton until late in this game. Fisher K-Mac had a sack, had a couple good plays from him out there. Do you see the week over week improvements, I guess, that gave you kind of faith that, okay, maybe they can do enough down the stretch?
Yeah, they couldn't quite get home last night for a long
Yeah.
period of times in terms of the pass rush, but they've had a couple of 5 sack games recently too. So how much of that was Washington State, how much of that was Virginia, I don't really know. The biggest concern continues to be deep pass coverage.
Yep.
So if a team can hold up against that pass rush, can the coverage hold up against that extra time, right? That's going to be a constant question the rest of the season, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know that there's a real clear leave them on an island every single snap type of corner. You can do it some,
There's not, no.
but what they are is opportunistic. So we started the conversation with that. So, Prafard was funny last night. He was like, "Yeah, I baited that throw. They've been going high low on us all night in terms of the combination routes on the perimeter." And he was like, "I showed like I was rolling to the flat and saw," he said, "I saw him wind his shoulder up," and he goes, "I got him." He knew it. And I was right at the back by the court behind the quarterback angle. I can't believe he threw it.
Yeah.
Like, it was pretty clear to me that window was really tight and you're protecting a lead and you're probably not getting the first down anyway. I was like, "What are you?" Oh, interception. Right. And
Yeah.
so I was actually right beside Travis Watson when that happened. So that was kind of cool. But
There
shout out to Travis Watson. But
we go.
he actually said it too. I heard him because I was taking pictures, but I heard him say interception before it actually happened because it was so obvious at our angle. It was
Yeah.
unbelievable to me that he threw it. But that's an opportunistic play. But do they have the pass coverage, to get it done? That's
Yeah.
ultimately going to be the question for this defense, I think. The run defense has been outstanding, and that's
Yeah.
setting the tone. I talked to Cam Robinson about that in the post game, that's the tone setting part of the defense, that if they can continue to stop the run, it at least puts teams in a one-dimensional vibe, and then that gives you a chance to be, opportunistic, even if you don't make all the plays. I will say the second half of the last two games, though, they've cleaned up the pass issues they were having, right? So
Yeah, I'll,
Louisville
and
and
in large
Washington both
part,
had big
yeah.
plays early, but in the second half, Virginia cleaned it up. So can they get that cleaned up in pregame, pre-planning, versus having to react to it in game? I guess we'll see, but they're definitely giving up too many of those pass chunks.
Yeah, and they've played some talented receivers, Deuce Robinson from Florida State, Chris Belt, Louisville, and I think Josh Meredith in this one. He had 7 catches, 108 yards. Most of that was done in the first half, like you mentioned there.
This
And
bell's really
we
good, by the way.
I think we all America saw that again on Friday night against Miami. Golly, he might get up into like first round NFL draft conversations. Like, they had him as like the fifth receiver on ESPN boards, but like that guy's something else. I'm really glad he brought up Jason Pervard because I don't think it gets talked about enough. He kind of gets lumped into the secondary a lot of times. And yeah, he is part of the secondary, but he is such a smart football player. And like, just like you're talking right there, like, yeah, I'm baiting the guy into that. But watching him, like, he's a guy that's very vocal on the defense. Like, he's calling out different stuff the offense is doing. He's pointing out stuff to the safeties and the linebackers. He's talking a lot. He's moving. And golly, like the guy just times up those blitzes off the edge so well. He almost had another crazy tip pass off the edge that which I think it was Maddox Marcellus almost came off the interception on that one. But he is really smart on those plays, and he continues to grade out as pretty good. I don't know what the PFF grades say, but like some other grading sites have him graded out pretty well this season. Just as a pretty really good player for this defense. And so it's good to see, kind of him get some limelight there because he's been really smart in some subtle ways this season.
Another cool story too, right? So he moved up the level from Morgan State, but more importantly, he didn't play nickel at Morgan State. He was playing
Boundary.
out on the perimeter. So I remember talking to him about this when he came in. He never played nickel, but he really liked it. That was something he said. I think it was in the spring was when I interviewed him. He was like, "Oh yeah, I love it. I love it. It's smaller space. You got different roles you have to do." And so he really took to that role. And it's certainly paying dividends, right? The ceiling interception against Florida State, and then the critical one here to set up a score. Is that two wins they get if he's not playing that nickel role? I don't know the answer to that. I just know he's it's a neat story that he didn't really play that position. They identified him as someone who could, and then he really took to it, So it's a combination of things coming together there to allow him to be a big contributor.
That's some of the biggest interceptions and plays of the season so far for Virginia. You talk about Florida State, but then, this one against Washington State too to kind of help them get into that field goal position. I did last thing on this one, Will Bettridge hit two big kicks and like look, it's. I think every football fan, like you wouldn't be a football fan if you didn't have some nerves when your kicker goes out there to kick. He's missed three field goals this year. One was in the 20 to 29 range, one in the 40 to 49 yard range, and then one 50 plus yard field goal that he missed. But other than that, he's been pretty consistently on it for the last couple seasons. He's 11 for 14 on the season right now. He's made all of his extra points.
He tied his career long with one of those kicks last night too.
Tied at
And what
47 yards.
yeah, and one of his misses, remember, hit the upright at NC State. To me, that you basically made that kick. And I know that's not how it works, but it's not like you shanked it. It had the distance. It just drifted a little bit too much. And Missouri and Auburn last night, Saturday night, both missed kicks in overtime that would have won it. And Auburn would have made Missouri have to match, and then Missouri missed it. That could have won the game. So it's not like it's not an adventure in college, right? So when you have a reliable kicker, even if it's on more limited range than some of these guys, right? The Georgia Tech guy's booming them. I don't think Betchers can hit a 55, 60 yarder in a game, even though he does it warm ups. I To have reliable 42, 44, 46 and in, that's a
Well,
really good thing.
even the shorter field goal that he hit to tie the game last night, that was a difficult angle to hit that at. Like he really like sliced that one. And it's funny, I see him like warming up pregame and he's like on the sideline trying to like kick field goals pregame. And I'm just like, how is that going to come into play? But I guess like I don't understand kicking mechanics, but it works for him and two huge kicks. So I definitely want to give him a shout out there as well. Looking ahead, all right. ACC picture, you knew it was going to be a big week because you had the Miami Louisville game on Friday night. You had Georgia Tech and Duke on Saturday as well. Virginia, they didn't have an ACC game, but SMU played Clemson. So there's only three unbeaten ACC teams left: Georgia Tech, Virginia, SMU. Virginia right now has a 15.8% chance to win the ACC. That's not just make the ACC championship game. That's to actually win the conference. That's behind only Georgia Tech and still Miami. ESPN's College Football Power Index still likes the Hurricanes' chances. What do you like the Cavaliers' chances? Even though this one, I know it didn't have anything to do with the ACC standings, but just it was a big week in the ACC outside of Charlottesville.
Chip in a chair. right? Like you're at the table. So that's always the first step. And I don't think you can get caught up in all of it. It's hard. And even Coach Elliott said last night, dealing with success, like this team hasn't accomplished anything yet. Right? Like bowl eligibility is great. Right. And I know it's not normal around Virginia, but what, half the teams in college football make a bowl game? Like the schedule coming in was already identified as being weak. Everyone, you haven't accomplished anything yet. And he said that, I think, after the Florida State game. I think they just need to wrap themselves in that blanket of that thought and go, nope, we haven't accomplished anything yet. And try to stay on that, particularly with three ACC road games still. So North Carolina. Then you have to go to Cal. That cross country thing is real. Like we've watched teams over and over and over
Florida State.
struggle, right? That's the most recent one. It just seems to happen all the time. Even though Washington State did the opposite, right? And looked really good. But by and large, the percentages have not looked great for teams making that long trip. The at Duke game, you know, Duke now knows it needs that game or any game, obviously now with a loss on its ledger. So I don't know, just win the next one. I'm wired that way anyway. I don't get caught up in all the
You're
projections,
a
but
coach. So that's how you are. I was listening to Nick Saban on College Game Day, and he was talking, I think it was the interview with James Franklin that they had, but he was like, calling, when you get ranked number one in the preseason, he hates it because of it's rat poison. And then it's like, well, you also hate when people like you're not doing well and they're talking bad about your team. That's rat poison. It's like, what do you where do you want to, you just want to be in the middle, like, so no one's talking about you? I mean, it's kind of this is it's the burden of having success, but it's also like it's you're having success, so it's a good thing as well. Having all the talk and stuff like that. And I don't think, and just from my experience being around this team, I know a lot of people started tweeting out when they were down by 10 in this game and weren't playing well. It's like, I think this team's getting too caught up in their press clippings. And I'm like, I haven't seen that with this team yet because, being there on Tuesday for the press conference, I was like asking guys about the bowl eligibility thing, and they're just like, Drake Metcalf called it rat poison from the start. Guys just didn't seem like they cared, and I know they do care, but they didn't care about, the rankings or the bowl eligibility part. They got a one-track mindset of getting to their bigger goals at the end of the season. So I don't think they get too caught up in all that
I think
stuff.
with Coach Elliott, it's more to him, it's less of that, less of the rat poison and the outside distractions, although that's a contributing part. To him, it sounds to me, listening to post game, that it's about the willingness to put it on the line when you've had success, right? Will you do the little things? He brings that up all the time. So last night, or Saturday night, the one that he referenced was a couple guys being toward the back of the group running off the field. So not quite running at the same rate that they were before they had won any games. That's a really small detail. And I know it feels like coach speak and nonsense. And we all remember Bronco, how you run on the field. Like, but coaches really like look at that stuff. And so will you put it on the line now that you've had success? Now that you know you're bowl eligible, will you put it on the line and do the little details? Will you fit your run gap? Will you win your hand violence? Will you? That's all the stuff that's going to ultimately decide where this goes, much more so than anything that anybody says. Like, I don't believe in bulletin board material, really. Like, I know Ahmad Hawkins has heard me say this a bunch. Bulletin board material is like a 2-minute thing. That stuff wears off real quick when you're out there and you get hit. Like, I mean, so great. Talk about however you want. Like, I don't, to me, it doesn't really matter what the projections say, any of that. Are you willing to keep doing the little stuff that leads to winning? Because winning's not easy.
I mean,
I don't care what you
sometimes
have.
you can talk all off season about how you're going to beat Alabama, and then you beat Alabama, but then you don't really win anything after that. If you're
Hey,
Tommy Cassiano,
he backed up his talk, though.
he was only talking about Alabama. Like he didn't have anything to say about the rest of the season.
I got nothing for Stanford or Pitt or Virginia, but.
Sorry guys. All right, real quick, let's. It happened last week. So UVA men's basketball played Vanderbilt, their first exhibition, as they kind of get ramped up for the season. Obviously, no one really saw anything except for the people there in attendance because there was no stream of the game. I listened to the radio broadcast of it too. I'm sure you did as well. And you kind of had a couple notes up there on the Sabre.com that you can go check out. Any kind of quick takeaways as we get ready, because this week we will see Virginia in action on Friday night against Villanova, in that home scrimmage.
No major takeaways. I think there are some things that are that they've been hinting at that we're gonna have to monitor. So defensive rebounding, defense without fouling, can you play fast without turning the ball over? All of these things they've mentioned, whether it's in media settings or Coach Odom on a podcast or Coach Aldrich on a podcast or whatever, all the kind of things that you don't really know with a whole bunch of guys getting to kind of start to gel together, right? So nothing alarming, but some things to at least put a little, a plus by and go, okay, let's monitor these things. The other one, free throw shooting wasn't great from either team, it sounded like.
No, both were like
And
50%. What?
right, it's one game. It was 48 minutes, less media timeouts, I think, in terms of what's typical. So maybe this happens in preseason scrimmages and we haven't known it in the past, but just something to monitor on a team with shooters. Why was the shooting so bad? And that's both teams, Vanderbilt too.
The Vandy coach Mark Byington came on afterwards and was like, guys were a little leggy, and so you've seen it. That's why you practice free throws at the end of practice, right, Chris? Like, so you got that legginess to you, and you're trying to make free throws at the end of the game. Just a couple things that I noticed. I think interior wise, I'm really it looks really promising with Ugonna Onyensu and Johan Grunloe. I thought they were both in presences on both sides of the court. I don't know what the final block numbers were, but they were both definitely altering shots just listening to the broadcast. Malik Thomas looks like a guy that is going to make buckets, and that's what he was brought in to do. He had 18 points in this one, made multiple threes, made a buzzer beater there at the end of the first half. So he looks right where he's supposed to be as far as a score. And then off the bench, like I like the energy of Chance Mallory and Jakari White coming in off the bench and kind of what they provide you there. Jakari White was lights out in the second half. Chance Mallory made some plays. So I really like that guard combo off the bench. I don't know if that starting lineup is necessarily what's going to happen. It was, Dallin Hall, Malik Thomas, Sam Lewis, Testa Ritter, and Johan Grunloe. Who knows if that's actually what they start with, but it's a good mix. And, they definitely go nine deep. We'll see if they get that 10th guy. It seems like Gertrude is still kind of getting back into the shape of things. So, a couple things to take away. And, it was a scrimmage. Exhibition game that
Right.
otherwise we wouldn't have seen or heard about.
Right. I'm eager just to see it. Like just see it. And it felt like we're living in the dark ages, not being able to see. I thought we were able to watch everything all the time, but so that was a little different. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see it in a home setting. We don't know the format yet. Coach Odom didn't know back on Media Day, and I don't think there's been a news release about it yet. So we'll see what the format is. I'm anticipating a normal game, because I think both teams are going to want to have at least one. And I don't know what Villanova did with their other situation. So I think Virginia's going to want at least one, and they're in control of it mainly because of the host. So I expect it to be mostly normal, particularly since it's also in a broadcast window. It's going to be on the what network extra or whatever. So it'll be interesting just to kind of see what it looks like. Are rotations different? Are combinations different? Right? Do you combine different people together? Did you learn anything? We know this is an analytics staff. So they track more than just, did you get a rebound? Were you in position to get a rebound? Did you, right? They track all of that. So it'll be interesting just to kind of see how things evolve.
Never mind like the stats and getting to see guys shooting stuff. That the biggest thing that I was missing from not being able to see it is like the rotations and who what lineups they're playing together, because you only get like they're talking about one guy with the ball, and like it took me I think through halfway or 4 minutes into the first quarter to finally tell who was in the starting lineup for Virginia before they made any substitutions. So getting to see that and kind of the rotations and stuff is going to be really interesting, especially on a team that is going to rotate more than we're typically used to seeing over the last how many ever years of the Tony Bennett era, because they could play smaller lineups because they went at a slower pace. This is going to be much more fast paced, so you have to play more guys, and they've definitely got a good number of 9 to 10 guys that could play. So that's going to do it for us here. A little bit of basketball talk after a big football win. winning 22-20 over Washington State. As always, you can catch us here on the Who's On podcast on our YouTube channel or over on Apple, Spotify. Please leave a 5-star review or comment. Chris, we got a big week ahead. Script basketball scrimmage at UNC for football, and the Saber.com will be there to cover it all.
And preseason questions for basketball throughout. So, as we lead up to the official game in November. So,
Yeah, so big week ahead on the Saber.com, and as always, here on the Who's On podcast. We will catch you later in the week.